As I mentioned on Sunday with regard to the materials, since I've made an adjustment in my thicker work this far back, decided to throw this stuff up online that we're actually on the outline. So it's not going to be anything fancy, it's just copy and paste so that what's on the sheets up there in case you don't have your paper, and that also will assist in any visitors who are with us. But we are on point B on page 22. Point B on page 22 on the exercise of giving. We talked in our last study about different ways of giving, and what we wanted to emphasize in that is that when we talk about giving, it is not limited to money, and even when we're talking about money, it is not limited to the first day of the week contribution that we do as a part of the work here at Westside. It can be inclusive of our talents, of our time, other opportunities that we might have. But the second point in this section is the importance of planning when we give, purposing our giving. And if you will, we have been in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. I would like you to turn there again and just note a couple of verses in Paul's letters. The first in 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 5, the Apostle Paul's statement, "I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you have previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as grudging obligation." There's two different times that the idea of purposing is raised in this area of giving monetarily. In both of those occasions, but in verse 5 and also in verse 7, when we are told that each individual can give as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. We'll notice both times the term grudging or grudging is used as a part of this verse. And the indication is that by purposing, by preparing, here it's verse 5, the notation that you previously promised this amount as a part of this gift. By making these decisions, this willful decision, it can help a person to be cheerful, as indicated in verse 7 of the text, generous or liberal. And it will not be considered something that is given by compulsion or as a result of a grudging spirit. And I think that's a very beneficial thing. It's very easy to promise things. Let's say there's this idea, maybe a vow that I make to God or for God concerning first day of the week contribution, that I'm going to give a certain amount. Most of us, at least in our day and time, have some understanding and the knowledge of the ability that we have to give as far as our wages, what we're going to make for a year. And so we think, okay, I'm going to give this amount. And that's a promise that is made. So if I were to, as part of that, to purpose and determine to give amounts weekly, as is given in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 as a pattern, by doing that and by budgeting those kinds of things, it is something that will be helpful and allow me to be cheerful in what I'm doing. This is something I'm determined to do. I'm doing it systematically. I'm doing it a little bit at a time. And I think perhaps, at least in part, that is what the Apostle Paul is talking about. You said you'd give this amount, this much. Do it ahead of time so that when it comes time to get the money or to utilize the money, you won't be thinking to yourself, well, I promised that I have to give it, and there is some grudge or some problem and a feeling of compulsion because perhaps you hadn't prepared sufficiently or it's not immediately available. It is simply, and by the way, when we talk about this and making practical applications, I think that it's something that individuals who are good with their money recognize. That is, a budget is something that is helpful in making those decisions, and purposing those decisions are very helpful in accomplishing these things and making it easier to do as you intended to do. And I really do believe that as you look at both chapter 9 and verse 5 and verse 7, and then you go over to the first epistle that he wrote, as he talks about the first day of the week collection in verses 1 through 4. He tells them on that occasion, on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up, as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come, and that he would come and bear the gift to Jerusalem. When these instructions are given, that they are helpful in allowing a person to be more generous in their giving, but also to have a better state of mind in regard and feel better about the giving that they offer God. And, it's a special person. And I, by the way, don't have that special ability to say, I can just kind of do it doing it at one point in time and be disciplined. Most of us need some kind of budget and some kind of discipline in that regard. Yes, Joseph.
It's even more important now because there's so many different ways to spend money now than there were in the past. And you can find yourself where perhaps you use a credit card and you pay it off every month so you don't get any interest charges. And so the purpose in your heart, all right, I'm going to give X amount to the collection. But if you haven't gone through and budgeted and thought about, I'm going to spend this much on food or going out to eat or whatever else in the world, and then you get to the end of the month and that credit card bill is more than you thought it was going to be, then you may be thinking, well, I don't want to pay the interest, that wouldn't be good, so I'll dip into the money that I was going to put to this giving or that giving, pay that off, and then I'll take care of it next month and let it catch up. And
we are based very much as a society in this concept of credit, and maybe it'd be best if we went back to a barter system or a cash and carry system, but that's not where we are now. And it can really sneak up on you. And it has an awful lot of people. In fact, the concept of getting into debt and such is something that's impacted our society to a very great extent, led by our government. It has affected many Christians as well in a detrimental way. There's a second thing to be brought up in regard to this as well. Not only does it allow for you to have that proper mindset and also to keep your vow, but it is an indication of the fact that you're giving to God first. That the gift that you offer to God is of primary or greatest importance. And I think that certainly is the right attitude for us as Christians to have, the recognition that this duty that I have as a Christian, and it's that's the way it is with any Christian duty that you have, especially those that are directed to God. This is something God requires of me that I am doing as a part of my service as a child of God directly. That those things need to come first. They need to be most important to us. And if we have determined that, then basically the idea is, okay, I've done this. Now what's left over is for me to utilize using whatever priorities that I have. And again, even with that, there are obligations, I think, with regard to feeding your family is more important than spending all your extra money on golf or hunting or fishing or electronics or whatever it is that your particular vice may be in that regard. But the fact is that we should put God first always in every aspect of our lives, and this would be a good example of that, to determine or to purpose in your heart to give this amount, and it is something that is very beneficial. If all of us were to do that, I have no doubt that the amount of benevolent work that we do, the amount of personal benevolent work that we accomplish on our own, as well as the first day of the week contribution, which you would see gains, materially gains as far as the actual amounts that are given, that will be, probably rather prodigious. And that would certainly be a good thing to do as work. So something, if you're not saying that many of us do not do that, but I just think that it is something we all should strive for.
Something else about planning and cash versus credit cards and whatnot. I found myself not carrying cash around because everywhere takes a credit card and a debit card. And I'd get somewhere and they'd want cash and I wouldn't even have it. I wouldn't be able to buy something there. But I found myself where I'd be around someone and they needed benevolence. I'm talking about personal benevolence in this case. They needed $5 for gas or needed whatever. And I didn't have any cash on me. So one of the things I started doing, just planning ahead was I made sure I had cash on me just in case something came up where I needed to help someone.
Yeah. I know of a lot of Christians that will have a $20 bill that they'll put tucked away in the back of their wallet or something just in case there is a request or a need that they come across it, that they'll have some, at least some ability to help someone instantaneously for some small amount. Of course, $20 didn't go near as far as it did when I heard that the first time. But again, it's the idea of being generous and the idea of planning ahead is something that's very beneficial. And we're talking now here about the exercise, the actual practice of giving, and some beneficial suggestions that may come from it, having discussed the theology or the doctrine of it as we have in previous lessons. Anybody else with regard to that idea of planning with regard to the giving? You'll notice the quote that's up on the board, and it's an interesting quote that he gives. And the purpose of it is to indicate that even an individual who has very little, if they purpose, here is an indication of sacrifice. And this is an amazing thing, especially if individuals who were very poor were to do this, and perhaps similar to the Macedonians that we alluded to in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. If there is any that is a slave or a poor man and fasts 2 or 3 days, what they were going to set before themselves, they sent to them, had the reference, apparently in this context, to Christians who were in prison, considering themselves to give good cheer, even as they were called to give good cheer. So this would be an example of a way in which planning and forethought could allow you to be more generous. Those are basically the ideas that are found here under letter B. Anybody want to add anything to that? Oh, excuse me. It helps if I actually turn it so you can read the quote. I wanted to put each letter all together, but some of them are too long, and I'm not able to do that with this particular material, so I forgot to turn it. That's, somebody tell me, is it Aristides or Aristides? Or
Aristides,
okay. All right. I've always been convinced that if you just pronounce it one way and sound like you're talking, you know what you're talking about, people would accept it. But you may know that name well enough that it wouldn't work. Okay, if you'll notice the statement at the bottom of that section, if you plan your giving, to plan your giving, if you wish to give cheerfully, so this is a good point to make. Okay, then the third section is suggestions with regard to giving, some practical suggestions. And he's already talked about planning your giving, but he mentions this specifically with regard to helping the needy. This is actually one of the objections that I raised to some views that people hold with regard to the area of benevolence, is the idea that that if a special need arises with regard to benevolence, then we'll take care of that special need. Again, if no planning is done, just as a matter of practicality, and you hear about this often, but individuals' spending has a tendency to basically expand to cover whatever their wages or their earnings are. And that's an amazing thing, but it's actually so. And of course, I can show myself to you as a good example of this, because while there has been some increases in the standard or the cost of living over the years, there's a significant amount more that I'm making than I was a number of years ago. And yet, after helping to pay for the kids' stuff and the coming on $4 gas and all these things coming, at the end of the month, you still, you seem to just about all that's gone. That's it. If you don't make the effort and plan with regard to saving up and to give. And so, benevolent needs are always present. There are, however, times, and the example that we found last Sunday evening with regard to Brother Foster's visit to the Philippines is an example of that, where you have Christians, brethren in another part of the world who have been devastated by typhoon. And those kinds of things come up from time to time. And if effort is made to be diligent and to plan with regard to giving, both personally, privately, as well as collectively, which I think, again, is the intent of 1 Corinthians 16, then especially with regard to the benevolent needs, that you cannot foresee. There is more ability on our part to help when those things do arise, if some effort is made to set things aside for that purpose. And I know that for a number of years, with regard to the budget that the elders have set for this congregation, there is always at the beginning of the time, is okay, this is the amount of money that was given on the first day of the week last year. These are things that we spend that money on, and there is always an amount that is set aside for benevolent purposes. And having some forethought and foresight in that regard is helpful when those things do arise, for either individually or destitution on a broader scale, as we saw in the Philippines come. So the idea in planning, but specifically planning with regard to benevolence, the practice, you have the Good Samaritan as an example, where a man fell among thieves and he just happened upon him. He had the wherewithal to help him and to support him for a period of time. That's something that is very beneficial and laudable for an individual who has the ability and the willingness to do so. So that's the first thing. Plan your giving with regard to benevolence. That's a good suggestion. These are suggestions, in a sense, good suggestions, but they are suggestions. If you have a question or a comment, that's fine, but we can go through them fairly quickly as well. Okay, second one.
Second two.
Plan the use of your talents and time. Don't wait until someone asks you for help on the spur of the moment. Look at your schedule, budget your time to offer your abilities. And by the way, brethren, this is something I'm very grateful for the fact that as a gospel preacher that I have a lot of time that I can sit in my office and I can study and I can prepare materials and I can study and all of those kind of things. But we all need to be studying. And if any of the men especially, through your study, prepare things that will be beneficial to the brethren, then don't hesitate to share those. We have the Wednesday evening invitations. And for some of you, it may take longer to prepare an invitation talk than others. But if you've come across in your studies material that might be beneficial to the brethren, develop that. Just take 10, 15 minutes a week until you've got a lesson prepared for that purpose and then deliver that. I've kind of opened over the years the bulletin for someone would like to write. Now, if you do that, then I might edit it a little bit if your spelling's a little off or your sentences run on a bit. But the thoughts that you have for that, those kinds of things benefit not only you, but it allows you to teach others. And if you just take a little bit extra time in that regard, utilizing your talents. Encourage song leaders before they get up to lead singing that they practice. One of the things that's amazing to me is that how often I see the very best of our song leaders when they lead singing that they're preparing beforehand. I know of one very talented song leader that every time he would he's no longer with us, but every time he would lead singing, he would get here early and go in the back room and practice. And he was among the most talented of musicians that we had in our number. And others who are good song leaders, they'll have themes, they'll tie the thing, they really put a lot into it. And then I've seen other men who aren't very talented and capable, or perhaps are lacking in experience. And if you ask them to lead singing, or seeing that comes around, they're scrambling to get something last second. And that's something that astounds me. And I've even seen that with regard to the giving of talks and the preaching of sermons as well. It seems like the ones who do the best job of it, who would be able to do it off the cuff or with very little preparation, are still the ones that spend the most time in preparation. And preparation is a big part of that, being effective. And as such, being edified, because those two things go hand in hand. You say, well, the practical aspect of this? Well, if you haven't worked at it, let's say a song leader hasn't practiced, and so they move the song too slowly, or the pitch is too low or too high, it becomes a disruption, and as a result of that, the brethren are not edified in the song because the song's not working because there's something musically ineffective. Same thing with regard to preaching and teaching. Not prepared yourself, then you're going to be more difficult to understand, to follow, to be edified back through your efforts. And so the use of time in order to prepare is something that's, I think, very beneficial. And again, that may take budgeting. But there is another aspect of giving of yourself this time that is helped by budgeting and by working. Okay? All right, third point. Third point is taking from the text that we had Ben read at the beginning of our time together, Matthew chapter 6, which is the part of the Sermon on the Mount, to where there is mention of charitable deeds being offered up, alms, help to others, benevolence being offered up. In that case, the giving, of course, and by the way, an application can be made of this in regard to giving on the first day of the month as well. I never remember. I think it was, I don't know if it was Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer, but one of those two books, that there was a rich man that came to their town, and he put $100 bill in the plate, but he attached to the $100 bill his business card or his calling card, so that everyone would know that he was the one that had offered up that gift. Look at me, and look what I've done. And that kind of attitude with regard to giving is something that is certainly inappropriate and is spoken against by our Lord Himself with regard to the charitable deeds that you do. You do not do them to be seen by men. In fact, in this text, it tells us, when you do a charitable deed, verse 3, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, which is by actually an impossibility, unless you have some kind of a brain disease, and I suppose someone might not know what one hand is doing if they're using their other hand. But it does make the point, is that this is something that should be done privately. This is something that you do not do in an ostentatious way to bring glory to yourself. Now, having said that, it is not saying that it is inappropriate or wrong for there to be knowledge of good works that you do. I think sometimes extremes are brought to bear when these kinds of passages are discussed. Sometimes there is benefit for what you do to be known, which is the idea of shining as a light in the world, of salt that is beneficial to man, and that is our Christian influence. We're not going to be a positive Christian influence if other individuals do not see us doing the things that God would have us to do. But there is a difference between that and drawing attention to yourself. The most obvious example that I could find of this would be Tim Tebow and the tremendous societal uproar over his, as they call it, Tebowing or T-bowing. I don't know which they call it, it's spelled with his name, I-N-G on the end of it. But which is him bowing in prayer and in thanks to God after every touchdown throw or every finish of the game and all those kinds of things. And there are a lot of people that have a problem with that. Others that do not. But it does have that unhappy result of an individual being self-aggrandizing and being perceived in that way by much of the religious world. And there is a way to demonstrate your faith and demonstrate your commitment to Christian living without drawing such attention to self. That's typical of what the Pharisees did and the Sadducees did, which is why our Lord did condemn such a practice here in the text. And there are a number of things. There's nothing wrong with saying a public prayer and for people to know that you're saying the prayer. But if you stand on the street corner and raise your voice to be heard when you're praying a private prayer to God, that's Phariseeism. That's that pride and that desire to be seen of men that is an evidence. If an individual fasts, which again is a private thing that we have discussed, and because he has fasted, he looks a little peaked. People say, "Are you okay?" That's one thing. It's another thing to rub ashes under your eyes and on your face and wear sackcloth so that people will see you and they will know you're fasting. And then they will perceive you to be a righteous individual. In fact, Jesus, you remember, says, when you fast, wash your face. In other words, it's a private matter. The purpose is not to bring attention to yourself at all, ever. And that certainly should be the case when you're offering up these things. It may be that some will be aware of it. You don't say, well, I couldn't help that brother because if I help him right now, people will see me doing it. I can't do that. But you also should not be going around looking for opportunities for people to see your righteousness. That's what the Pharisees were doing. That's what's condemned in the text. Yes, Ron?
You look at TV nowadays, and since it's about a period of time for the Roman Catholics, see this smudge of ash, which is a superficial form of humility. I saw a senator or a congressman today on the center of that smudge on his face doing a charity. I don't know how other people go about it, but it's good.
So again, this idea of doing it, it's not to be seen as righteous. It's not to to raise your standard in the eyes of men or to have people to think better of you. That should never be the motivation of the child of God. It is doing God's will. It is striving to help others. It's something that is born out of love. And I don't know how many times. And see, this is the problem. This is something that I would like to do. As the preacher in this congregation, there have been opportunities and situations where I have found brethren who have asked me for opportunities that I might be aware of or have utilized information that I have given them to be benevolent. And I want to say, look at the example of this person. Just look at what they've done. This is a wonderful thing. They're being generous, they're being benevolent, but they have explicitly asked me, let no one know that I've done this. And I have been the go-between on a number of occasions with regard to one who's been a recipient of benevolent help. And the person was adamant about saying that I want to give this, but I don't want them to know who did it. Just do it for me, please. And it's based on this concept of humility. And I laud that. I think it's wonderful. But at least I can tell you there are brethren who are doing that. and that's an encouragement to me that that's happening. But I won't tell you who they are. Because they asked me not to. But that's the kind of attitude that we're supposed to have in the church. All right. Questions, comments? That's that third one. All right, so that gets us then, as you'll notice, the statement is much easier and blessed to give than you plan to give. So the concept of planning that giving is something that is important. Then the conclusion, and as you'll notice on the page 23 in this particular lesson, and it'll be finished, is that the purpose of any spiritual discipline is to help us grow, strengthen us, become more Christ-like. If we're using the spiritual application of the concept of growth and strengthening. And in the discipline of giving, we have an activity that certainly helps fulfill that. When you talk about giving, what are the most wonderful examples of gifts given? And of course, the primary one is the gift of Jesus, as God gave His only begotten Son. And then, of course, by extension, we can say the same with regard to Jesus giving Himself. Jesus' life was not taken from Him. At any point in time, He could have refused it, refused that at death on the cross, but He willingly gave His life, just as God gave His Son. So, in the same manner, we're told the Macedonians gave themselves to the Lord first and then to others. And so that's an addition to the others that we have studied. So up to this point in time, we have studied prayer, meditation, fasting, singing, fellowship, and giving. And that gets us through this material. It always goes a little quicker when we're talking about the practical things than the doctrinal aspects. Yes.
I had a point on planning giving. I thought we had another point that was brought up earlier.
That's fine.
But there's a lot of worthwhile charities that will take a monthly contribution, just an automatic one. So that's kind of in the neighborhood of planning. You decide to do it and just commit to it, and they comes out of your checking account or off your credit card.
In fact, most charitable organizations will do that because that, again, that's anytime you've got something that is a monthly situation, ongoing thing, one that is determined or purpose, it's going to be more lucrative. It's going to be more liberal in the sense of giving than if it's not. And so yeah, they very much appreciate those things. I would keep in mind this one thing with regard to giving the charitable organizations to examine them, to be familiar with them, and to recognize that that there are certain charitable organizations that have religious affiliations, and that by giving monies to some charitable organizations that you are in fact supporting what might be doctrinal error or religious institutions without authority. And there are plenty of charitable organizations that you can involve yourself with that that are not affiliated with those who teach error or practice error. And so certainly something to think about to make sure that the giving that you do is as it should be. So something to keep in mind. Because we sometimes, I think, can be unthinking and contributing to causes that are inappropriate. There's a charismatic group that we see every once in a while that come on the street corners, and they're always wearing their white suits, and they have and they stand up on, at least the ones that I see stand on the 199-183 up there by the McDonald's, and several times a year they do that all along Jacksboro Highway, and it's a church, and they teach error, egregious error, but they also do some good works with regard to social gospel, another example of the Salvation Army, those kinds of things. And I think that it's inappropriate for a Christian to be, you've got quarters in your cup holder, and you throw it in, those things can be utilized in ways that are more acceptable. So certainly something we should consider. Yeah.
I've got one more. I don't know if you call them necessarily beneficial discussions with people, but certainly really in-depth discussions with people when they've asked for some kind of contribution. And I'll ask them, straight up, are you associated with any kind of religious organization? Well, they get all up in arms and say, we're doing good. And of course, that's a great opportunity to talk to people. They don't generally like it.
Well,
you can talk.
Generally, the one who's holding the boot or whatever it is, yes, you receive the money if you talk to them about it. They're not going to accept it. But there is that principle. It's a why in the world would I want to have an association with a group that is religiously in error and leading individuals astray? And normally what happens too, what I tell people when they make such requests or get phone calls and all, I budget the amount of charitable offerings that I'm going to offer, and I make that decision. I don't do it haphazard, and so I don't receive those solicitations over the phone and other ways, and that might be helpful. Just be careful, that's what we're saying.
But if you ever volunteered to work for one of those organizations to get the money, mm-hmm, and every organization there is will call you.
Well, yeah, that's true. They share mailing lists. And
one that I used to. I couldn't get anybody on my street to do it, so I did it, I don't know, a number of times, and when we were not able to do it, our phone would ring, and every charitable organization in Fort Worth just about, come on, get us that, when you tell them, well, I can't do that, I'm obligated too much already.
Well, the Christians have had this conflict for years and years, and I don't know what. Never been in a business situation, but as some of you who have been worked in offices and worked for large companies and all, the United Fund is a yearly fundraising situation that basically it is comprised of many different charitable organizations under a single umbrella. And there are some businesses that, especially in the past, were very adamant about their employees contributing to the United Fund. And I remember. I'm sorry,
United Way.
I'm sorry. That's right. United Way. Anyways, you're right.
That's the United Way. Does too.
And as a result of that, there have been a lot of Christians that have had some conflict in regard to that, because some of the organizations in the that are associated with United Way that they would have some doctrinal problems with, theological problems with, problems of conscience in supporting those. I am under the impression that now, I may be wrong about that, but I had heard that it is now possible to earmark the contributions that you give. Doesn't work.
Unfortunately, when I first came to Fort Worth, I had a new job, and I was put on that deal to represent I know a petroleum company. And after seeing, going through all this sort of stuff, it takes your time. I didn't think too much about it. But after, later on, when I got to looking into it, I didn't want to contribute to it. But then I did call up some places, especially the Catholic organizations. Unless you were Catholic, I was like, United Way was giving money to them, but you had to be Catholic to benefit. Couldn't just anybody benefit from it. So for that reason alone, I wouldn't give a nickel to them. And I had the same problem. My boss had to give my part, so we'd be 100% every year.
Yeah, see, that's the impetus. You know, 100% participation in some companies were really. But again, you know, and if you're under pressure with regard to that, I mean, you may be that by assuring them that you will, you know, if it's a part of this as a company responsibility, that you will choose a charity and give what you would give to that charity, then perhaps some of that could be alleviated. But there are Christians with pains of conscience with regard to this that have struggled with this for a long while. Like I said, I was under the impression that they began allowing funds to be earmarked for a specific charity, and that may be the case.
Well, they will let you earmark it, but they just take it out of one thing.
Yeah, that may make your conscience feel better, but they budget what they budget.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. They're going to get, no matter how many times you get, if everybody needed the same thing, they're still going to take that percentage and give it to the people, because that's the way it's set up.
Yes, sir.
Well, I work for the government and I work in the military, and we would come down and our section would be assessed a goal with a certain amount we had to reach, and it had to be split up. And finally, it used to be all United Way and things like that. Then they came out and you had about five choices, and you checked off where you wanted that money to go, but you still had to meet that goal.
That's compulsory charity. Of course, that's military for you, I guess, but I know that there are a lot of companies that do the same. Yes?
Yes, and I also had to give to the United Way, but I was allowed to specify for Cook Children's Hospital, was good enough for me.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I despise these salaries that some of these people get.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, CEOs and people up in my offices get some salaries, ridiculous. But there are these military charities don't do that. They don't even pay their CEOs or their officers anything. Zero. And so I think that contributing to them like the BMW.
Well, the important thing in this regard, and again, to be honest, I'm glad that I'm, as a preacher, I'm glad I've never had to work for a company. I've always felt that way. But it's very beneficial in some ways. But, you know, as Christians, we are given the responsibility to be charitable and benevolent. And we also have some discretion in that regard. And it's best to be wise and to exercise that discretion wherever possible in regard to giving. But the key is to give and to be benevolent and help. Yes,
sir. Let me say one more thing about this.
Sure.
They always said, yeah, thank you. So they didn't.
They didn't receive
it. That I gave them. So I guess in a way.
Well, it would be a matter of, I would think, individual Christians' conscience as to whether that would be satisfactory to them with regard to the United Way specifically. But I do know that some Christians have done that. I can understand why they would desire for it to be earmarked.
The National Football League does the same thing when they go out to the watch the ball games, United Way, in and out to the audience that watch the ball game. You can contribute. All right?
And again, in those, I would ask that you not feel compelled to give to any particular charity. I think that, you know, it could be that kind of thing where, you know, everybody else is doing it. The appeal is to the emotions and also that desire not to be the one that's not doing what everybody else is doing. But if you are living as a Christian should, you are being generous, and that giving that you are that you're doing over the period of a year's time, we'll just use as a period of time, is generally much larger than others. And you know, if you could just get over that that feeling of guilt that naturally comes when somebody's holding something out to you and you say no. And we all, I think, feel that a little bit. Then, you know, you're planning, you're getting better, you're being using discretion, you're making proper decisions, and that really is what we're supposed to do. But do not allow that to be an excuse not to be generous, not to be giving, not to be benevolent in our attitudes, because we can certainly exercise discretion and wisdom in doing it. The fact that we are called to do it is something that we have, I think, established with great clarity.
We used to have to give 100% back away, and about 10 years ago they came out and we would give to the Red Cross or other named United Way. So we have a, probably similar to what Joe was talking about, we've got to give, you know, they want 100% participation as part of giving, but it doesn't all have to go to United Way, and I was very grateful that they did that.
Yeah, that alleviates conflict.
You got to think about why they want 100% participation. Do they want it because they're going to do the most good? No, they want it because they put it in brochures about their company. They're doing it to be seen of men. So if you're going along so we can reach this 100%, then you're helping them do it to be seen of men. I'll give it all then, yeah. So I give it my private life and these people that want to use it for their own tally boards and different ridiculous things like that don't get anything.
Justin, I appreciate you when you say
and you were wrong when you said everyone here feels that guilt in some way.
Everybody with Justin feels that little bit of guilt. Justin
does.
Again, there's something to be said in that regard for not caring what men think. I mean, what matters is what God thinks. And in that regard, and by the way, you certainly should not, because you feel that little twinge of guilt, or because others are doing it and you're not, they may look at you. I mean, that's certainly not sufficient justification to do something that in fact is an unscriptural practice, something that should not be done, and that is giving to a religious organization that is steeped in error. Regardless of what men think of you, and they do, as Jane said, they'll look at you like you've lost your mind. We're doing good works, and you don't want anything to do with this. How dare you? But again, men do not define good works. God, that's the determination.
A little research on these large groups. Very small amount goes to the benefit. One of the best ones would be the Salvation Army or the veterans, because their salaries of the CEOs or whoever paid, some want one of the dollar and some very little. But many of these large fundraisers have a lot of uses for travel and high living.
Oh, yeah. And as Ron mentioned, I don't know if you heard him, but if y'all didn't hear him, he mentioned that there are a number of charities that are run by the military, perhaps for military, those in the military, those kinds of things, that there's no administrative money taken at all. So that's another thing as far as discretion. And why personal giving? I know that if there is a friend that I have, or there is a brother or sister in Christ that needs money, and I've got $40 in my pocket and I give them $40, I know that all $40 goes to in that kind of personal giving is the very best that can be done, in addition to the encouragement that he gives to those individuals.
Just kind of a last minute comment. Sorry, the Salvation Army being a church organization. It sounds kind of military, but it's...
Yeah, it's a religious group.
It's a religious organization.
It's more like Methodist.
It would be something that I couldn't give any money to,
no,
even though there's no major...
I think Jay was talking about the fact that they don't have administrative costs and everything. Yeah, okay. Yeah, my objection to Salvation Army as well would be it's a religious group that teaches... it teaches salvation by faith only, and other doctrine there, so I didn't have a part giving to them, despite the fact that they do social things. All right, thank you all very much for your kind attention today.